Good afternoon. Let us come to order and go on the record. I am Commissioner Karen M. Kimmerite, presiding commissioner for this hearing. And with me this afternoon are Chair Charlotte A. Mitchell and Commissioner Tenola D. Brown Bland. I now call for hearing docket number G39, subs 46 and 47, in the matter of an application of Cardinal Pipeline Company, LLC, for a general increase in its rates and charges, and that's with G39, sub 47, and to provide the depreciation rate study that is required by the Commission's Rule R680, and that's in G39, sub 46. On October 26 of 2021, Cardinal Pipeline Company, LLC, which I'll refer to as Cardinal or the company going forward, filed its depreciation rate study as of December 31st, 2020, in G39, sub 46. On February the 10th of 2022, Cardinal filed a notice of its intention to file a general rate case application pursuant to Commission Rule R1-17A. Also, on February 10th of 2022, Cardinal filed a request for a waiver of three Commission requirements generally applicable to the filing of a rate case. On March 15th of 2022, Cardinal filed its application and its direct testimony and exhibits in support of the application's request to increase Cardinal's rates and charges. On March the 28th of 2022, the public staff filed a motion requesting that the Commission issue an order consolidating Cardinal's depreciation study as filed in G39 sub 46 with its general rate case application in G39 sub 47. On April the 4th of 2022, the Commission issued an order consolidating these dockets. Also, on April the 4th of 2022, the Commission issued an order granting Cardinal's request for waivers. On April the 7th of 2022, the Commission issued an order establishing general rate case and suspending rates. On May 2nd of 2022, the Commission issued an order scheduling investigation, establishing intervention and testimony due dates and discovery deadlines and requiring public notice, and I'll refer to that order as a scheduling order going forward. Among other things, the scheduling order set this matter to be heard at an expert witness hearing beginning today, Monday, July the 11th of 2022 at 1 o'clock p.m. in Commission Hearing Room 2115 on the second floor of the Dobbs Building located at 430 North Salisbury Street in Raleigh, North Carolina. On June the 10th of 2022, the public staff filed the direct testimony and exhibits of Roxy McCuller and John R. Hinton. On June the 13th of 2022, the public staff filed the direct testimony and exhibits of Sonia R. Johnson and Neha Patel. On June the 17th of 2022, the public staff submitted corrected exhibits of Witness Patel. On June the 27th of 2022, Cardinal filed the rebuttal testimony and exhibits of Cardinal witnesses Hogg and Miller. On July the 5th of 2022, Cardinal, the public staff, and Piedmont Natural Gas Company, Incorporated, which is Piedmont going forward, and these parties are collectively referred to as the stipulating parties going forward, filed with the Commission the stipulating parties settlement agreement and stipulation. Also, on July the 5th of 2022, Cardinal filed the settlement supporting testimony and exhibits of witnesses Miller, Haig, and Fall, and the public staff filed the settlement supporting testimony and exhibits of witnesses Hinton and Johnson. On July the 6th of 2022, the stipulating parties, along with Public Service Company of North Carolina Incorporated, which is PSNC going forward, and collectively these companies are called the Movements, filed a joint motion to excuse witnesses and cancel the evidentiary hearing, which is the joint motion. On July the 8th of 2022, the Commission issued an order allowing in part and denying in part the joint motion to excuse witnesses. Among other things, the order excused all of Cardinal's witnesses and public staff witness McCuller and found good cause to receive their testimony and exhibits into evidence at the hearing, but declined to excuse public staff witnesses Hinton, Patel, and Johnson. And so that brings us to today. Pursuant to North Carolina General Statute, Section 138A-15E, I remind members of the Commission of our duty to avoid conflicts of interest and inquire at this time as to whether any commissioner has any known conflict of interest with respect to this docket. Let the record reflect that I have no such conflict and that my fellow commissioners have not identified any such conflict. I now call upon counsel for the parties to announce their appearance for the record, beginning with the applicant.
Good afternoon, Chair Kilmarat, members of the commission. Robert Kaler on behalf of Cardinal Pipeline Company.
Thank you, Mr. Kaler.
Good afternoon. I'm Gina Holt with Public Staff here on behalf of Using and Consuming Public, and appearing with me today is Public Staff Attorney Rita Constant.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Kristen Athens from the law firm of McGuire Woods, appearing on behalf of Piedmont Natural Gas Company.
Good afternoon. Mary Lynn Grigg with McGuire Woods on behalf of PSNC.
Thank you, counsel. Are there any public witnesses who wish to be heard regarding this matter before us today? Okay. And seeing that there are no public witnesses here today, are there any preliminary matters that we need to discuss before we begin with the evidentiary hearing?
I'm not sure if we need to introduce testimony from the excused witnesses at this time, or if you prefer that we wait for a later time.
Okay. So, Mr. Kaler, I think that we'll begin by having the testimony. You can make a motion, beginning with the applicant, to admit the testimony of the company.
So then we would move the company's application into the record in both dockets. We would move the direct testimony of Carrie Miller, Michael Cousineau, David Haig, and Stephen Fall in their exhibits as they've been marked. The rebuttal testimony of David Haig and Carrie Miller, the supplemental testimony of David Haig, Carrie Miller, and Stephen Fall, as well as the settlement agreement between the stipulating parties. We've asked that all that testimony plus all the marked exhibits be introduced into the records as if the parties were here, gave that testimony in person.
Thank you, Mr. Kaler. The motion is allowed. And the public staff, if you have any motion to make on the record, please.
Yes, we move the admission of the pre-filed direct testimony of public staff witness Roxy McCullough, consisting of 8 pages and an appendix. And we move the admission of Ms. McCullough's exhibit RMM1.
Okay. And Ms. Holt, your motion is allowed. Are there any other preliminary matters to discuss before we begin with the evidentiary hearing? Ms. Holt, you may call your witnesses, I believe, as a panel.
The public staff calls as a panel Sonia Johnson and Neha Patel.
Ms. Holt, did they have a summary that they're going to be providing, or just answering commission questions?
A summary.
Okay. Yeah, just commission questions. Is Mr. Hinton going to be part of the panel?
We were going to call him separately, but if you would like us to call him now.
I think it'd be helpful to have all three of the witnesses at the table. And we'll begin by swearing in the witnesses. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony, put your right hand on the Bible, and do you swear or affirm that the testimony that you're about to give is the whole truth and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay, thank you. So the commission has some questions related to the settlement agreement and the stipulation that was filed on July the 5th of 2022. And before I begin with the commission's questions, I wanted to give a little bit of context about what we're specifically going to be trying to obtain some information about. And the first line of questions, I think, is going to be related, directed more to Mr. Hinton, and it relates to the rate of return on equity in the settlement agreement of 9.55%. And we did notice. Okay. Let me back up for a minute. Ms. Holt, would you introduce your witnesses?
Sure. Thank you. I'm going to begin with
thank you.
Ms. Patel, since you're on the end. Ms. Patel, please state your name, position, and business address for the record.
Good afternoon. I'm Neha Patel with Public Staff's Energy Division. My address is 430 North Salisbury Street, Raleigh, 27603. I'm an engineer with the public staff.
Ms. Patel, on June 13, 2022, did you pre-file direct testimony consisting of 7 pages and 2 exhibits?
Yes, I did.
And on June 17, did you file corrections to your exhibits A and B?
Yes, I did.
Do you have any other changes or corrections to your pre-filed testimony?
No, I do not.
If I were to ask you the same questions today, would your answers be the same?
Yes, they would.
Chair Kimmerhart, I move that Ms. Patel's direct testimony be copied into the record as if given orally from the stand, and that her exhibits be identified as pre-marked.
Your motion is allowed.
Ms. Patel, you have a summary?
Yes, I do.
Please read that.
The purpose of my testimony is to present to the commission the public staff's position on the following: Cardinal Pipeline Company's billing determinants, allocation of cost of service between both of Cardinal zones, rate design, pipeline integrity management expenses, and proposed cybersecurity expenses. With respect to the billing determinants and the allocation of cost of service between both of Cardinal's zones for the test year ended December 31st, 2021, I concluded that Cardinal has accurately recorded its billing determinants, and I am not proposing any changes to its cost of service allocations or rate design methodology, both of which were approved by the Commission in docket number G39-0. I'm also providing testimony regarding approval of Cardinal's pipeline integrity management expenses, as well as the public staff's concerns regarding the company's request for its proposed cybersecurity estimated expenses. Since these cybersecurity costs are estimates, Cardinal has proposed to place the actual incurred cost in a deferred account for proposed recovery in future rates. While the public staff recognizes the importance of protecting critical assets from cybersecurity threats, public staff recommends that Cardinal provide the commission and the public staff a report showing the final program components and cost by discrete category before commencing the overall cybersecurity program. Public staff accounting witness Johnson discusses the mechanism for this approval. This concludes my summary.
Thank you. Now, Ms. Johnson, on June 13, 2022, did you pre-file direct testimony consisting of 11 pages, an appendix, and 1 exhibit?
I did.
Do you have any changes or corrections to that testimony?
I do not.
If I were to ask you the same questions today, would your answers be the same?
Yes.
On July 5th, 2022, did you pre-file settlement testimony consisting of 3 pages and 1 exhibit?
Yes, I did.
Do you have any changes or corrections to your pre-filed settlement testimony?
No, I do not.
If I were to ask you the same questions today, would your answers be the same?
Yes, they would.
Chair Kimmerhart, I move that Ms. Johnson's direct testimony and settlement testimony be copied into the record as if given orally from the stand, and that her exhibits be identified as pre-marked.
Your motion is allowed.
Ms. Johnson, do you have a summary of your testimony?
I do. I filed initial testimony in an exhibit in support of the public staff position on June 13, 2022, which resulted in several adjustments to the company's filed case. On July 5, 2022, the parties were able to arrive at a settlement of all issues, including a difference in calculation of the amortization of excess deferred income taxes, the terms of which are reflected in my settlement testimony, settlement exhibit A, and the testimony of company witnesses Miller, Haig, and Fall. This concludes my summary.
Thank you.
Mr. Hinton, please state your name, position, and business address for the record.
My name is John Robert Hinton. My business address is 430 North Salisbury Street, Raleigh, North Carolina. I'm the Director of Economic Research Division for the public staff.
Mr. Hinton, on June 10th, 2022, did you pre-file direct testimony consisting of 33 pages, an appendix, and 10 exhibits?
Yes.
Do you have any changes or corrections to your pre-filed direct testimony?
Yes, I do. On page 33, there are a couple of typos. On line 13, the number 2.03% should read 1.95%. Line 14 below, the number reads 4.91%. It should read 4.93%. The overall cost cap on my exhibit is correct, 6.88%. There's no change here, it's just typos. That's the only correction that I have.
And with those changes, if I were to ask you those same questions today, would your answers be the same?
Yes.
Do you have any changes or corrections to your exhibit?
No.
And for the record, one page of your testimony was marked confidential. Is that correct?
Yes.
On July 5th, 2022, did you pre-file settlement testimony consisting of 7 pages and Appendix A and 1 exhibit?
Yes.
Do you have any changes or corrections to your pre-filed settlement testimony?
No, I do not.
If I were to ask you those same questions today, would your answers be the same?
Yes.
Chair Camerite, I move that Mr. Hinton's direct testimony as corrected and settlement testimony be copied into the record in this proceeding as if given orally from the stand, and that the appendix and exhibits attached to his direct testimony and settlement testimony be identified as marked when filed. Mr. Hinton, did you prepare a summary of your testimony?
Yes, I did.
Please read it for us.
On June 10th, 2022, I filed direct testimony in this proceeding to present to the commission my recommendations as to the reasonable cost of capital to be used as a basis for adjusting Cardinal Pipeline's rates. As a result of my analysis, I conclude that the overall cost of capital to Cardinal is 6.88%. The aforementioned cost of capital is based upon a capital structure comprised of 48.04% long-term debt and 51.96% common equity, a cost rate of common equity of 9.48 and a cost rate for debt of 4.06. On July 5th, 2022, I filed settlement testimony to support the settlement agreement and stipulation settlement between Cardinal Piedmont Natural Gas Company, Public Service Company of North Carolina, and the public staff, collectively known as the stipulating parties, with respect to the 7.34% overall cost of capital shown in Hinton Settlement Exhibit Number 1. The settlement cost of capital is based upon the public staff's recommended capital structure ratios, a negotiated cost rate of common equity of 9.55%, and a negotiated debt cost rate of 4.96%. In my opinion, the overall cost of capital will provide a return to the owners of Cardinal that is both reasonable and appropriate, and that it affords opportunity for the debt investors and equity investors of Cardinal to earn a reasonable return while being fair to customers. This concludes my summary.
Thank you. This is
Two lines of questions that we're particularly interested in. And the first line of question, I think, is going to be directed mostly to you, Mr. Hinton. And it relates to the negotiated cost rate of common equity of the 9.55% in the settlement agreement and stipulation. And I'll get to that question, those questions in just a minute, but the context of it is that we're looking to receive the analysis of the public staff about the level of risk to Cardinal, and to ensure that the rates will be as low as reasonably possible and also just and reasonable. And then the second line of questions is going to be to the entire panel. And it relates to the depreciation amount. And we are particularly interested in a better understanding of the public staff's analysis that Cardinal's asset will be retired and decommissioned by 2050. So those are the two lines of questioning that we're going to be asking about. And more of a minor question that we're going to begin with relates to something that we noticed in the testimony that might we may need to have a late filed exhibit about. But on pages 8 and 9 of the settlement agreement and stipulation that was filed with the commission on July the 5th of 2022, it stated that the regulatory fee was to be calculated at 0.13%. And I think as the panel knows, the cost to operate the commission and the public staff, the commission issued an order on July the 30th of 2022 and docket number M100 sub 142. And that order raised the regulatory fee effective of July the 1st of 2022. And the order stated that the regulatory fee for non-competitive jurisdictional revenues is to be set at 0.14% effective July the 1st of 2022. And since we noticed that the regulatory fee in the settlement agreement is set at 0.13%, have the parties considered that and could file a late filed exhibit with that correction?
Yes, we could. We can file the late filed.
Okay, thank you.
The company would have no objection to that request also.
Okay, thank you. So, Mr. Hinton, I'll begin with you. Again, this relates to the ROE and the cost of capital. And one of the differences that the commission noted between your direct testimony and the direct and rebuttal testimony of Cardinal's witnesses was the companies that should be part of the proxy group. And I believe it's the public staff's position that the proxy group should be comprised of the LDCs rather than the interstate natural gas pipeline companies as advocated by Cardinal. And can you explain why the public staff believes that the LDCs are more appropriate to be in the proxy group than Cardinal's position?
Yes, the core reason is competitiveness. The LDCs for their transmission related functions have no risk to speak of. They have operating risk and business risk, but they don't have competitive risk. The interstate pipeline business is chiefly competitive. I mean, if you look at a map of interstate pipelines across the country, especially down in the southern part of the country, it's a maze of different pipelines. So when pipelines contract with shippers, you know, it's on a negotiated basis at times. You know, they have contracts naturally, but to get that contract, there may be some negotiations going on. And that's been my understanding for years with regard to interstate business. But this pipeline that is intrastate does not have any, quote, a competitive risk from a competitive pipeline. Now, I've often said that if ACP had been built, that could have posed some risk. Of course, the owners of Cardinal are the shippers. And as I say in my testament, this simple fact cannot be overlooked. But that pipeline it's been canceled for some time now. The role of Mountain Valley Pipeline is still uncertain. Mm-hmm. And then its proximity would not necessarily cross a line of Cardinal. It would have to be another pipeline addition that's being contemplated by various parties before that could ever be built, assuming Mountain Valley Pipeline connects with Transco in the Virginia border, near the Virginia border. So all of this is uncertain and not reasonable as far as I'm concerned with regard to following the commission, the company's Witness Hague's recommendation that it's interstate pipeline. I've heard these arguments for, I think this is the fourth Cardinal case I've worked on, and they've been raised every time. And one, the graphs I have in my testament, the confidential one, and the non-confidential one, or the confidential one, shows a response to the company regarding its competition within its sort of geographic competition, that is. And when I compared it to what was asked, a same question back in 2011 or 12, I had the same map. So there's no difference. There's a competitive landscape with regard to active competitive interstate pipelines has not changed. The fact that it's not foreseeable to change guards me to say it's not an interstate pipeline company. It doesn't have the risk profile. The investors were coming to invest in Cardinal, they would not see the returns that would be commensurate with an interstate pipeline. I went a little further to this case versus other cases. I actually looked at the O&M costs of this pipe. As noted in my testimony, I had some dangerous information obtained in the Piedmont rate case that looked at the original Sand Hills pipeline that runs out of Transco near Charlotte down to ultimately down in Wilmington. But I think it stops largely in the Rockingham area to fuel the old Carolina Power Light Rockingham units, now considered Duke Energy Partners. And so that pipeline, we had detailed cost information on that line as far as the costs for O&M. They were not, when I did my analysis, I saw not significant differences in the cost of O&M. Plus, I talked with personnel with the Commission's Pipeline Safety and about operating pressures on the transmission legs of the LDCs versus Cardinal. And I was told, my understanding is that the operating pressures are similar. And so I looked at, so I tried to look at from both a competitive person, if you were investing in the Cardinal LDC, and I looked at from just a plain old business risk, and I could not see a significant difference in those parameters. Again, when we do rate of return testimony, the ultimate risk measure is the investment risk. But investment risk is often a function of business risk and financial risk, and things get murky in time. And so, but when I look at investment risk, and there's no risk measure that's perfect, that really perceives the or represents the investor's thinking. And that's why there's a host of measures, as I presented in my testimony. Mm-hmm. So you'll see in one of my exhibit 9, I believe, I show the investor related risk, things from value line and risk measures from quality of earnings and dividends, and then the credit ratings by Moody's and S&P. And it's clear that the investment risk associated with a pipeline company represented by Witness Hague's core group is significantly different and more risky from that perspective as compared to the LDCs. And I even go back to an old conversation I had years ago with Jeff Davis, and where we kind of discussed how Pio Cardinal was created and why it was created. And it could have easily been an LDC function, but it was a joint venture with Public, Piedmont, and Transco. So I still see it as more of an investment risk associated with an LDC as opposed to the Interstate Pipeline Company.
Mr. Hinton, you just referred to Jeff Davis. For the record, can you tell state who Jeff Davis is?
Jeff Davis was previously director of Natural Gas Division for the Public Staff.
Thank you, Mr. Hinton. That explanation was very helpful, and I think it leads to the issue that we were really looking at, which is the level of risk, because the level of risk is important for determining what the rate of return is going to be. And for the level of risk is really the crux of the concern about whether the shippers will renew their contracts with Cardinal. Is that the kind of the crux of the issue for risk from the public staff's perspective?
That's a major determinant, yes, okay. Because it's a shipping risk is mm-hmm. how this company receives its income. And of course, as I noted in my testimony, its revenues are a function of its demand, largely its demand charges. So it's a very stable flow of revenues. But yeah, that obviously it has only one business line, that's to move natural gas. So that's its core function and core investment returns are derived from that service.
Thank you, Mr. Hinton. And following up on that, what is your position about the level of risk to Cardinal that these shippers would not renew their contracts?
Very limited, mm-hmm. because the two shippers are Public and Piedmont Natural right. Gas. I mean, excuse me, and the two owners. Mm-hmm. So it makes that relationship somewhat cloudy and questionable, but it definitely takes away the incentive to maybe go to an alternative pipeline shipper.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, you know, as long as there's business and there's need of gas being pushed down from the interconnection with Transco down to Clayton, then there'll be business and revenues obtained by Cardinal from both Public and Piedmont.
Thank you, Mr. Hinton. Related to this issue, can you talk a little bit about whether Cardinal does have some risk because it doesn't have an exclusive franchise to serve its customers? Is that something that you considered and you would view as a greater level of risk that that was analyzed in your determination of the ROE?
I have to agree that having a franchise territory is a great risk reduction, and that's why utilities are singled out mm-hmm. separately from non-utility companies, in my opinion. It's that franchise territory. But given that the owners have franchise rights, and that I mean Piedmont Public, that kind of again clouds that issue of whether they do not have franchise rights. Legally, they do not have franchise rights. I understand that, but why would the question I put forth in my testimony? I don't see it as in the personal self-interest of Piedmont nor Public to go to an alternative shipper unless it was somehow shipper came in with rates that were significantly lower, and then that would be a prudence issue. But even that becomes a hard one to comprehend because any new pipeline that comes into this area is going to have to charge rates that are going to be undoubtedly higher than Cardinal's, because Cardinal does work on an embedded cost structure. And these new pipelines come in, you know, and they have to charge rates commensurate with the current cost of steel pipelines, the current insulation costs, labor costs, and current returns on capital. So I don't see how an upstart pipeline company would have I'm not saying it can't, of course, because competition generally favors the consumer. But in this narrow conversation, I don't see it as a reasonable expectation that I would take in consideration in lowering my ROE.
Okay. Mr. Hinton, in your testimony, when considering the ROE, you discussed how changing economics should be considered in the ROE analysis. And did you provide any analysis or have any thoughts about whether Cardinal bears some greater risk related to the current volatility of natural gas price?
Okay, let me make sure I'm focused on it. Yeah. So does the volatility in natural gas prices, is that a factor in my evaluation?
Right, because I believe in your testimony, you talked about changing economics should be considered. And so is the volatility of the price of natural gas, where the natural gas price is substantially higher, was that any part of your analysis?
No, okay. Not when I look at changing economic conditions, that's largely, I mean, if you go back to my testimony for 30 years ago, you'll find I talk about present financial conditions, which is in regard to the state laws, I believe. And then we enhance that over the years. And now we have a section of my testimony that looks at the changing economic conditions and how that could impact the delivery of service. I don't see the changing economic conditions as we're currently in as reason to change my ROE recommendation.
Okay. Thank you. And then since your position or conclusion is that Cardinal bears little risk in not having the contracts renewed, can you explain how that position was taken into account when you reached the compromise for the ROE of 9.55%? It help us understand how there's no inconsistency and that the 9.55% negotiated percentage is consistent with the public staff's position about little risk.
It's largely just where we went to and where we came from. I mean, this is negotiations, and the company had a pre-filed position of great excess of 10% on ROE, if I recall, and my pre-filed position 9.48. So in settling the positions between the parties, there's always give and take, as you understand. I think in my personal appraisal, the give the public staff gave in representing the customer's interest was relatively small. I've seen bigger stipulations in the past where more was given up. Mm-hmm. I don't mean it, but it was. Mm-hmm. The one item that you should be aware of is the cost of debt. That's part of it. It's a bundled stipulation of all the issues. The cost of debt was clearly one of the items. The cost of debt that we agreed on was based on a spread approach that I think is a reasonable approach to do when you have to come up with a cost rate that doesn't officially exist because they have no debt. They officially have no long-term debt on their books. They have short-term debt, but not long-term debt. And so I had to impute both the debt level, the percent of the capital reserve, but also had to arrive at a reasonable cost rate for debt. And doing that, I went back to their previous issue, which is they typically issued debt on five-year notes. And I got the pricing date for that particular issue. And I looked at the spread on that particular day, and that's my 135 basis points. Okay, so I originally filed a 135 basis point. At that time, the current yields on five-year treasury maturities was, I have to look back upon it. Mm-hmm. It was what's in my testament. And rates have gone up. So we settled on the spread rate was 3.61% was what we based on the new rate on, the stipulated rate. It was a relatively high point in the in five-year treasuries. So I felt, to be honest with you, that was a little bit of a give on the public's half side. And so I'm giving you some background on the gives and takes. But overall, I still find out, in general, it should provide comfort to the commission that the public staff represented the consumer well. If nothing else, just looking at the distance that the public staff went to for a final settlement, and I applaud the company for being acceptable of a reasonable compromise.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hinton. That's helpful. Moving on to a different question that relates to some of your comments about new pipelines potentially being constructed in North Carolina. And I wanted to see if you or the public staff is aware of the recent May 2022 filing with FERC and docket number CP22-461, in which Transcontinental Gas Pipeline Company filed an application for a CPCN seeking to authorization to construct and operate its Southside Reliability Enhancement Project to provide an additional 423,000 decatherms per day of firm transportation service under a contract to Piedmont beginning in the 2024-2025 winter heating season. So that's a long question, but are you familiar with that docket at FERC?
You're talking about, let me clarify, you're talking about the lateral that runs north in Virginia and dips in North Carolina in the northeastern section of the state.
That is correct.
Yes, mm-hmm. I was aware of that.
And in regard to risk and the risk for contracts not being renewed, did that application for CPCN, did that impact your assessment of risk?
No, it didn't.
Okay, and why is that?
Largely because it's not geographically in the same area. Mm-hmm. So there's no pipeline crossing Cardinal's lines associated with that particular application. There are other avenues available to interstate pipeline companies that go beyond my full understanding of the business, but I did not perceive that lateral as being enough of a enhancement to the competitive level of risk that Cardinal faces. I did.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hinton. That's all the questions that I have about this topic. And I think before we move on to the issue about depreciation, I'd like to pause here and see if the other commissioners have any questions on this topic.
Just one follow-up, if I may. Mr. Hinton, you talked some about, you know, you compared the business risk and the investment risk of Cardinal to interstate pipelines and to the LDCs, and I follow your testimony there, but talk a little bit more about Cardinal compared to our LDCs, to our two big LDCs here. Is it a fair comparison? Let me back up. The rate of return on equity that has been agreed to here in the settlement is sort of in the ballpark as to the ROEs that were awarded in the most recent gas cases. And I understand we're, you know, different time, different market conditions, sort of, but putting that on the shelf for a minute, is it a fair comparison to make? Help me understand why those three companies, Cardinal, Piedmont, and PSNC, should be awarded ROEs that are in the same ballpark.
That actually, I contemplate that question because I relate it to comparing the T&D function of a wires company in the electric industry. You'll often find, if you look at RRA, there's a lowering of risk associated with with a T&D company relative to a vertically integrated company. In other words, if you're a T&D carrier, your ROE is going to be 50 basis points less than what you normally would expect for a vertically integrated company like Duke Energy. So I wanted to, and if I had my druthers, I would like to have been able to say, the investment risk profile of Cardinal is more akin to the transmission-related risk of an LDC, with the assumption that that risk level is less than the vertically integrated company known as LDC or public Piedmont for that matter. However, I just could not quantify that, and in trying to. I hesitate to get up here and say that because of this risk, this aspect, regulatory policy is different, that they get a lower ROE. In my mind, I think the transmission related risk associated with a Cardinal is less than an LDC. But I was at loss to quantify it. I don't have comparable measures. I haven't studied the investment community's view of a pipes only company. All I can think of is Atlanta Gas Light years ago had third party marketing, so they probably have a pipes only rate. But there's not enough of a collective thought process that would say I can look to this as an indication of how much less risk that an investor would acquire for a pipeline company, intrastate pipeline company such as Cardinal. So without having that kind of market related data, I was at loss to say it's less. So even though in my testament I do say, as you probably noted, I consider it to be related to the risk of the transmission function of an LDC, but I just couldn't quantify it. So okay. That's why.
All right, thank you. Thank you for that response.
I'm going to move on to the next topic, which is depreciation.
And Cardinal's intent to retire and decommission its asset by 2050. And I think these questions can be directed to whoever on the panel is best able to answer the question. And so the first question, I'm going to give a little bit more context before I ask the question. But beginning on pages 27 and 28 of Cardinal Witness Falls testimony, he states the following, and I'll quote, on October 29th of 2018, North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper signed Executive Order 80, calling for a 40% reduction in statewide greenhouse gas emissions by 2025, and also to reduce electric power sector greenhouse gas emissions by 70% below 2005 levels by 2030. And attain carbon neutrality by 2050. And then in addition, on January the 27th of 2021, United States President Biden issued Executive Order 140083. And then in the testimony, the public staff's exhibit RMM1, the public staff provides an assumption that there will be an end of life for the assets, and the end of life would be 2050. And so, the depreciation seems to be based upon the expectation that Cardinal's assets will be fully retired by 2050 and decommissioned. And so that's the context. But moving on from that, is the panel aware that in the commission's carbon plan docket, which is E100 sub 179, that remains open and is pending with the commission?
Yes.
Of course. And how is Cardinal proposing and the public staff agreeing to these depreciation rates with an end of life for the asset of 2050 when the commission has not yet made that determination in the docket? In other words, I'll refine my question a little bit. Did the public staff provide an analysis about whether it's appropriate to assume that Cardinal's asset will be retired by 2050? Did you provide an analysis and make some sort of a determination about the end of life for the asset?
What we relied upon was the expertise of the public staff witness McCullers. Mm-hmm. Her going through the depreciation study that was filed by Cardinal, we relied upon her expertise. We accepted it. Based upon discussions that we recently had with her, she considered it. She asked questions of the company. She determined that given the conditions that were placed into the study, and I guess their end of life that they put into the depreciation study, which was really just to determine the rates that they were going to use, she was good with it. We had no issue with what was the recommendation of our expert witness.
Mm-hmm. And I recognize that the witness is not here on the panel. So what you're able to answer, please do. And if it's not your something you can't answer, I recognize we don't have her here. But if we were not to accept that the end of life for Cardinal's asset would be 2050, would the public staff's depreciation amount, would that change if we believed that a 2050 retirement date would not be appropriate?
Based on the past couple of depreciation studies that Cardinal has filed, they always used depreciation or useful lives that did not explicitly state a 2050 mm-hmm. end date, but it was inferred, I guess you would say. So we had no issue with it. It was consistent with what was filed in the past and what was accepted by the public staff. So we had no issue. So it was accepted in this case.
Okay. So there was no separate analysis about what a different depreciation amount would be if there was not the 2050 end of life date?
I guess just recently we looked at maybe if it wasn't an end of life, and it was not dramatically different. It was minuscule, the difference. And we would be happy to provide a late filed exhibit with that analysis for you.
That would be helpful if we could get a late filed exhibit. And then related to the 2050 date, has either, so Piedmont and PSNC are the two customers of Cardinal, correct? And is the public staff aware of whether Piedmont or PSNC has given notice to the public staff that they intend to cease operations by 2050, or how they were going to get this natural gas to their customers after 2050? Has there been any information related to this issue about what will happen after 2050?
Because again, this was just strictly an assumption that was used in the depreciation study to determine depreciation rates.
And has that's helpful, and I appreciate that. And related to that question, Has the public staff received any information from Cardinal or Piedmont or PSNC that if the Cardinal pipeline is not used for natural gas after 2050, whether it could be used for other resources like hydrogen or renewable natural gas?
So we did data request the company, and the company mentioned that they could potentially look into blending hydrogen, renewable natural gas into the pipelines. But this, again, is all in the initial study phase.
Okay, thank you.
I would like to add to that. I've been around IRPs for quite some time, and it's 2050 is a long ways away. And make a decision now based on 2050, even with this initial carbon plan, is spec. There just needs to be a little more time. There's a lot of SMRs and small nuclear reactors and other assumptions that are in the IRP that have yet to be fleshed out. So the ultimate plan is far from certain, but it's great that we have a plan. I'm not discrediting that process. I'm just saying we need the plan, but the actual plan is going to be far different, I expect. Mm-hmm.
And I think for purposes of our questions, having the late filed exhibit, I think will provide us quite a bit of information about really kind of the impact of that date and how it affects the settlement. So I think that'll be very helpful. And I'm going, I've received a question that I'm going to read from the commission staff that's somewhat detailed. But in Cardinal's 2020 depreciation study that was filed in G39 sub 46, which is called account 367. It says that mains have an average service life of 75 years. And its average life is 16 years, and the average remaining service life is stated to as just under 29 years. And so if we assume that Cardinal retires the plant and account 367 mains in 2050 as proposed, these depreciable plant items would have only been in service for an average of 45 years, which would be 16 years plus 29. And so the question is, does that mean that Cardinal is accelerating depreciation on these plant items 30 years earlier than otherwise would be expected?
I'm so sorry, I got lost in the number that you mentioned.
Right. So, I think that the question is Cardinal accelerating based upon their depreciation schedules? Are they substantially accelerating the depreciation of the plant items? And the analysis that we had, that would be 30 years earlier. So is that an issue that you looked at when you were analyzing?
Based on our analysis, they are not accelerating depreciation in any way for this account 367. The majority of account 367 was placed into service back in 1994.
Okay.
And if you were to add 50 years to that, that's 2044. So if you were saying that the end of life was in 2050, that is in no way ending of life.
So you do not believe there was a substantial acceleration?
Not at all.
Okay. That concludes the questions that I have. So I'll look to Chair Mitchell and Commissioner Brown Bland to see if you have any questions related to this issue.
Mr. Hinton, just for you, talk a little bit more about the reasonableness of using 2050 as an end date here for these assets. I mean, you just testified a minute ago that the carbon plan is under development, and there are strategies for achieving the carbon reduction targets that are now set forth in the statute that are evolving and will continue to evolve as technologies change, et cetera. So just help me understand why 2050 is a reasonable date in light of the totality of the circumstances.
To be honest with you, Chair Mitchell, to say I'm an exponent of appreciation would not be correct.
I understand that. And we'll give your testimony the way it's due, Mr. Hinton. We know you and we know you well. Just help me, give me some, help me answer that question.
I said that 2050 is a reasonable goal, but there's so many unknowns to get there that the idea that if in the backdrop, your question is, will the gas pipeline no longer be needed because trans natural gas will be severely limited. We still have a need for reliable power in the state, even with the carbon plan. So there has to be a balancing. And battery costs and solar renewables, and I don't believe we're going to handle the need for reliable power even in 2050. So I expect there'll be some limit, some need for gas, whether it's supplied by CTs and limited combined cycle units. I haven't looked at that detail at the expansion plan in that bracket of 2040, 2050, but I expect there'll still be a need for that. How we accomplish the goals of the government plan, I'm not sure. And so I can't really say that. I just don't have a general high level confidence that 2050 will no longer need natural gas service in North Carolina.
Well, the public staff agreed to use 2050 as a reasonable end of life for these assets. So help me understand why.
I guess the reasons that Ms. Johnson said are appropriate in that this pipeline was started in 94 and it's got X amount of life left in it. And then there was zone two that was done years later, but still the fact is that that sounds to me, based on my understanding of her testimony, the 2050 is a reasonable time period for the end of life for those assets.
Okay. And you have nothing to add beyond what we've heard from Ms. Johnson?
No, I don't. Okay. The only sprinkle dust I had was to suggest that the IRPs, the carbon plant at this point in time is it's a great plan, and we're working to make it a better plan as we go through the investigation. I'm pleased the commission is digging into these plans at the level it has, but I just still look at them as a little bit of it's a plan.
Okay.
And it's important to do planning, but the plan itself is likely to change. I mean, I can go back and recite history of the Cliffside case.
Please don't.
Need to go through that.
We're still living through it. Okay. All right. No, I have nothing further, Ms. Sim. Thank you.
Thank you. So we'll move on to questions on commission questions, beginning with the public staff.
No questions
from Piedmont.
Nor from PSNC.
Okay. And how about from the applicant?
Just a few. Okay. With regard to the questions on the depreciation rate, you indicated that you're looking at, in this study, end of life in 2050, but we're setting rates right now for the next 5 years. Is that correct?
Correct.
So that if there's a change that we think needs to happen, there'll be another study before the next rates go into place. Would that not be true? So if there's any indication that the end of life is different, that could be corrected well before we arrive at the end of life.
Exactly.
Thank you. Mr. Hinton, a few questions to you about your recommended rate of return and what the public staff settled with. Now, you as the witness for the public staff on capital structure and rate of return, you filed testimony and you recognize that the company will file testimony and largely disagree with whatever values you've arrived at. Is that correct?
Correct.
And so as we get into negotiations and you read the testimony of the company's witness, David Haig, you recognize that he disagrees with you with regard to the risk that Cardinal has compared to the LDCs.
Yes, and he also disagreed on the cost of debt, and we met on that rate.
Correct.
And part of the stipulation, we came to his agreement on that.
And it's your conclusion that Cardinal is less risky than an LDC, correct?
That's my belief, yes. It has the risk associated with transmission-related risk. I think less risky. The question becomes then how to quantify that lower risk, and that's when I was at loss.
And you indicated you struggled at that quantification, did you not?
Yes, I did.
And so I think we recognize, as Chair Mitchell mentioned, that in recent LDC cases, the allowed rate of return has been higher than the 9.55 that you've recommended here. Is that not true?
Yes, the two last recent cases have been approved at 9.60% ROE.
And we are in a little bit of different financial situation than we were last year, are we not, with regard to rates and things?
Yes, we are. Interest rates have increased, bond yields have increased, and inflation rates are higher now. The hope is that things will settle back down in the long run, but right now they are significantly higher.
And so your range that you recommended, your testimony was for return on equity was 9.48 up to, 9.28 up to 9.64, is that correct?
Yes, that's the range of my estimates, correct.
And then you came in and recommended a level of 9.48.
Correct.
And the company and the public staff negotiated a settlement which involved more than just ROE, more than depreciation, other things that were involved in that total settlement. Is that correct?
Correct. At one time, I think in my cross-examination, I said a global settlement.
A global settlement. And so by arriving at 9.55, you feel like that's an appropriate rate for the public staff to agree with companies, and it's fair to the two carriers, Piedmont and to public service. Is that correct?
And the public at large.
As well as the public at large.
The reason that I say that is because obviously the cost that public and Piedmont bear to ship gas on the Cardinal system will be ultimately recovered from customers.
Correct. Thank you. That's all I have.
That's all the questions. Thank you very much. Before we conclude the hearing, are there any other matters that we discuss?
Well, public staff moves the admission of our witnesses' exhibits.
Commissioner Kimmerich, just to close the loop, when the settlement agreement was filed with the commission, PSNC was not a party, but as Mr. Kaler referenced, PSNC subsequently joined the settlement agreement and stipulation, and we're going to file a letter today just noting that so that that loop is finally closed for the record.
Thank you. Any other matters?
I think the only other matter would be the proposed orders.
Getting ready to say,
acceptable, Cardinal, yes.
Thank you. That will be good enough to adventure here.
Thank you.
Thank you.